All right, here we go. Hey, everybody, it's Eric from Barrel and Hatchet, and thank you for checking out another HatchetCast episode here on Spotify. And today I have a special guest and friend, Jason Bush. He owns a company called Bush League. I'll let him do a little bit of an introduction before we get started. But go ahead and make sure you subscribe to the channel. Also, check out our YouTube and Instagram. We found out that only 30% of the people who listen to the channel are actually subscribed. So if you want to help out the channel, make sure you subscribe to all the channels that we're on. It really does help out the platform. And I'll talk about a lifetime membership that we're offering at the end of this podcast that is to honor those who are supporting the community. So let's go ahead and get started. Jason, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
And just give a quick intro on yourself.
I'm Jason. I just started a clothing company for the in the 2A space, right? I'm doing a handful of clients currently. Mm-hmm. Just because I feel like it shouldn't be as expensive as it is. So
yeah.
They say if you think you can do it better, go ahead. So here we are.
That's right.
We're helping a lot of people and having fun, getting to meet a bunch of people. It's been fun. So
nice. How long have you been shooting?
I've been shooting 2 years. Like I think January is actually 2 years even.
Wow. And what was your first gun when you got into this?
My first gun, I had the one I carried and only shot 50 rounds a year. I had a Taurus, like a 3-inch Taurus. That I would carry appendix.
Right.
And then when I came to JTAC, I had bought a Canik.
Right.
The Elite Combat model. Mm-hmm. And that's what I kind of practiced with.
Did you start off on red dots or was it irons?
That's a good question. So I didn't have any of the iron sights habits, right? So I literally started my journey with red dot.
Nice.
So I'm red dot only. Now I've shot irons since because some competitions require it.
All right.
But if I have a choice, it's a dot on there.
Nice. So at what point when you were, a Taurus owner?
Yes.
And shooting 50 rounds a year, at what point were you, what made you decide to go, hey, I want to start getting more involved into shooting and, go take some classes and get better at this?
So I went to the range with some buddies, kind of like you do, and just started shooting and just kind of decided that I kind of wanted to do more of this. I didn't know what it looked like, mm-hmm. in the beginning, like we never do, right? I knew it was fun. I knew I kind of had a little knack for it maybe. And so I wanted to see what that looked like. And so I started I became a member at JTAC and came there for about 3 months on my own, 2 to 3 months. I watched a bunch of YouTube just to learn how to work the gun, how to take it apart, how to, not shoot myself. And then I went out there and did a bunch of those things to create manual arms for myself.
Right.
To where I could go to the next step.
Right. Yeah, that's something that, this is our second time recording this episode.
Yes.
But we talked about it earlier, and that was, not many people will do that, where they do the research on their own. They go and they search on YouTube and try to get at least understanding the manual of arms, how to take it apart, how to rack the slide and stuff like that. So, seeing that is a very rare quality. Most of the time it'll just be, hey, I'm going to go get a class and have the instructor babysit me. Right. So, for those who are now just getting into it, or if you have a family member, who is thinking about getting into firearms or friend, it's important to kind of walk them through it.
For sure.
And then be like, okay, you're good enough where you're not shooting yourself. You know, basic fundamentals. You can go take your first class.
Right.
So after you got, shot for a little bit and started getting into it, you took your first class with me.
I did.
Which is awesome.
I did.
What was your experience in that?
So I didn't know. I showed up not knowing what to think, right? I had never taken a firearms class before, so
yeah.
I didn't know what it was going to be, right? It's a bunch of people running around. What is it, right?
Yeah.
So I showed up kind of a blank slate, right? Showed up with made sure I had what I needed, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's a list on everybody's page that tells you what you got to bring, so I made sure I had all those things.
Mm-hmm.
I showed up and kind of went through the paces and had a really good time, and it kind of really just shows you how bad you suck, like most things do.
Yeah.
And if you can kind of adapt to that and go, okay, instead of like, oh, I don't want to do this anymore because I suck at it, like how do I become better to shoot maybe on that level that this gentleman's shooting on, or how do I get there and like the journey that it's going to take? And then just trying to figure those things out.
Yeah. You know, what's funny is a lot of the times I'll see this and I usually will kind of nip it in the bud, but it's okay to suck. It's good to suck because you can now find something that you can work on. And so usually in class, I'll see sometimes with students, they'll be beating themselves up or like, oh, you know, my zero's off or I'm never this bad. And it's like, no, like you're not here to defend an ego and to prove to me that I need to be impressed with your abilities. You're here to learn, right? And I'm not expecting you to be able to impress me. I'm expecting you to be, you know, not good at something so that way we can identify the problem and fix it and give you homework to work on. So, you know, you kind of went through and got exposed to that, which I think in our class, it was just you and one other dude.
I got lucky, man. Yeah, so
it was like a personal training.
Yeah, that's not always the case. Yeah, it usually is. Got full classes, but just happened to be that one. It was like one other gentleman and me. So I got to go like the one-on-one kind of thing, and it was not super expensive. So I was super happy at the time. And I'm like, nobody else is showing up? Cool. I'm your guy. What do you want to do? Exactly. Like, I'm super happy to be here. So
when you took that class, that's when you went into open gym, which was the run and gun type shooting.
Yes.
And when you went into that initially, what were some gear and gun limitations that you found out you had?
So, yeah, the first ever AR I owned, I went ahead and built. A buddy of mine used to build them, and I didn't know nothing about building guns. So I was like, I've been in construction for 20 years, like industrial construction, like power plants and all this kind of thing. So I'm like, if I can build that shit, like I can build this.
Yeah.
So anyways, I built it. I built an AR in like 15 minutes. I'm like, oh, this is cool.
Pretty much a gunsmith.
No. I know better than that. But I was like, oh, I could put a thing together, right? So and it worked. The first time, it didn't explode. That's cool.
Nice.
And I brought it with me. It was a 10.5 Aero build, which I still run an Aero. Mm-hmm. It's like my battle rifle, right? Yeah. So, old things die hard, right?
That's right.
But yeah, so I brought that thing out, a little 10.5 with a giant brake on it. And the reason we're laughing is if any of you have ever seen on Instagram open gym or been to an open gym, there's a lot of shooting underneath chairs and like inside of stuff. So it just blows crap everywhere.
Yeah. Especially a short barrel with a muzzle brake.
I did that because, again, I had done a bunch of research. Mm. And again, you know, where the rubber meets the road is a little bit different.
Right.
But in doing all that research, like a smaller gun, I figured if I could build something that was smaller as an AR platform, I'd be able to, you know, move around with it and all that. And it ended up being a little counterproductive.
Right.
Like, right. After you spend a couple years shooting, you kind of fall into your groove. Like people like 14.5s and 13.7s and 13.9s and 12.5s. And this, so you kind of develop that depending on what your shooting looks like and what your engagements are. So it's just been a fun journey figuring it out.
Yeah.
I started with the 10.5. Like I have it on a shirt that I made. Like I used that.
Yeah.
I redacted it and put it on there. Like it was just to kind of keep it around.
Yeah. I mean, it's a little bit of history about where you started.
Yeah.
So what were some pistol limitations that you saw? You said you had a Canik.
I did.
What were some things that you were like, I think I'm ready for something different?
So I really liked the trigger in it. That was really cool. Yeah. I do like my triggers, and I'm not really a trigger snob. I just kind of like that thing to be the same every time. I don't really care what it is as long as it's the same. It doesn't have 15 walls in it.
Mm.
That being said, the Canik, for some reason, and still to this day, I kind of now it's debatable, right, whether it's faster or not, but it's more consistent and efficient for myself, especially running a 2011 platform now. Going over the top with that Elite Combat, like the Canics have like a triangle slide on them, and then they were just super slick. So going over the top, I would like miss it or I would slide on it, and I'm sure people will say like it's you, which I'm sure it is because a lot of people use them and they love them. But for me, it just didn't fit me.
Yeah, right?
They didn't have serrations up the side. They had like some little ones at the bottom. I just couldn't grab it well. So reloading it dry, I just didn't like doing it. Mm. And there was a couple other things. There was no support for them at the time. Like, again, it was just a couple years ago, but Canik has blown up since then.
Support being like holsters and aftermarket
stuff. I was using like a Blackhawk with a button, which was good, but it would go on your light. Mm. So like they're not as good as some of the other ones, obviously. Couldn't get aftermarket slides for them. You probably could get barrels for them and like springs, but you couldn't get much.
Right.
And then now that we're talking, I do recall, like you couldn't get magazines for it.
Mm.
Like it came with what it came with. And like I messaged Metgar overseas. I messaged Canik every 3 months. They were out for like 2 years. They were just out of magazines.
Mm.
Unless you bought another gun, you couldn't get the mag. So I'm like, look, I can't even scale this thing.
Right.
And then so I throwed it in the safe, I didn't have a safe. Like, I just kept it. And then
throw it in my drawer.
Throw it in my drawer. Throw it in my sock drawer.
Yeah.
But I throw it in the drawer, and, like, eventually I sold it.
Mm.
But actually just not too recently. And then I ended up moving over to Glock.
Yeah.
The brick.
Yeah. Which has tons. You can make it a, not a Glock, you know.
Yeah, you can make anything you want, and it really, it worked for me. And you don't know what you don't know, right? So, right. Like, after shooting it for a year and a half or a year, and then bring it in, into USPSA for carry optics. I just recently moved away from it, but I mean, for a year and a half, like, it was fine.
Yeah. I mean, when I shot that class or taught that class with you, I was running Glock. I ran Glock for years, probably 10 years. And, it was, I think that's one of those things when you see guys like go into the shop or a gun store, it's like, when you get your first gun, you're like, oh, you pick it up and you're like, yep, I'm going to buy it. And it's like, oh, it feels nice. It feels nice in my hand. How often do I hear that? It's ridiculous. Yeah. But like, it feels nice in my hand, but it's like, you got to go shoot it. You got to train with it.
Yeah.
You got to run it to be able to understand what you need. And sometimes that's where you ask those guys, if you're like, who've been running that gun, be like, hey man, not just can I try it and see how, like, what are some experiences you've had with this gun? Yeah, what are your takeaways, and is it worth it? And then hear the pros and cons, and then you make a decision, especially if you're brand new. But Glock is it has so much aftermarket support. That's what makes it such a good platform.
And that's what made it work for me and a couple of the guys that ran with me. Like, there was no reason not to run it.
Yeah.
You can get the holster support. Yeah. You can get mags. You can get this. You can get that. You can get slides and springs, and you can Gucci it out all you want, or you can just, you know, like, I left most of my stuff. Like, it looked flashy, but it was all, except for the recoil spring, like, everything else was stock.
Yeah.
I did change the trigger.
Mm-hmm.
I changed recoil spring. That was it.
Yeah.
That's all I did to them. And just run them. Like, there's guys that are GMs that run, like, almost stock Glock 34s.
That's
like,
right.
It's how you run it, not what the gun is.
The Indian, not the arrow.
Yeah, exactly. Now, when you get to a certain level in certain sports, now, will a better machine let you portray that, you know, skill level a little bit better? Yeah, in my opinion, I think so, probably. Mm. When I moved to 2011, it's not like it made me some better shooter, right?
Have you seen, you know, now you're in USPSA and shooting two gun, have you seen people who try to buy that performance without the training? And absolutely. How does that work out for them?
It doesn't work out well. Like, it doesn't matter what it is, whether it's a rifle or a pistol or whatever. Like, you cannot buy performance. And that's what, like, you got to keep that separate in your head of buying performance and, like, having a good machine to be able to, you know, perform.
Mm.
There's a little bit of a difference. Now, if I just go try to buy, you know, some top-of-the-line gun, say Atlas, because, you know, we all love them, right?
Mm.
But say I go try to buy an Atlas, but I don't focus on any of my training, I'm not going to shoot that Atlas any better than I shot that Glock.
Right.
Because we haven't put the rounds down range. We haven't done the dry fire. We haven't paid attention to our shooting.
Mm.
We've just been burning ammo. So if you don't put the work and the effort in, you're not going to get the return on it.
Yeah. I've actually had some people misinterpret something I've said before, specifically in the night vision world, where I'm like, people are like, oh, well, you know, it is a better product because it costs more money. It is made better. I'm like, that's not that. Like, I get it. Like, a $3,000 laser or a $4,000 gun, yes, it's going to be great. It'll work perfect. But there's so many people out there trying to convince you to buy something that's high quality when, in fact, you need to go invest into yourself and train and then work your way through that journey. And then when that time comes and it's like, okay, my skill level, this will enhance my abilities because my skill level is there, that's when you make that jump. But there's a lot of companies out there that are going to try and push that on you because it's flashy, it's trendy, it's what you should get. Like, oh, I want top of the line.
Money.
It's like there's nothing more disappointing than seeing somebody with all the top of the line gear that is the worst person in the class. You know what I'm saying? Or the worst person in the group. And it's just like, dude, just buy ammo. I mean, you went from shooting 50 rounds a year to what?
Your first 12,000 the first year.
Yeah.
And I paid for all of it. You know, things have changed a little bit now, which is good. And so early in my shooting journey, which is, I'm very grateful for, and I'm sure we'll talk about that a little bit later, but there's been some developments and some networking that I've been able to do that has really just been able to let me start progressing. And I've got to spend some time with some gentlemen that I really respect and that are at the top of their game. And that allows me to learn how to train instead of just going and hanging out with somebody that's cool on Instagram.
Right. Yeah, I think you had actually waited quite a bit of time before you took your second class.
Correct.
And so how much time was that that you digested that stuff from the first class before you're like, okay, I'm ready for my second class? And who was that second class with?
It was almost a year. Yours was the first class, the first pistol class. So, and then we start out with drills, typically, with everybody on the shooting journey, right? You start with, because you're not running around with a firearm yet, typically, right? We're shooting static, we're shooting like a black belt standard, or we're shooting something, a standard you found somewhere. Yours was the first one. Mm-hmm. Digested that stuff. And then the next one was, I think, Joe Farewell.
Yeah.
And it was about a year later. Actually, might have been a year and a half later.
Yeah.
Because I don't think I did anything for a while. I just did open gyms at JTAC for quite a while. A buddy of ours, Kenny, mm-hmm. Asked if I would come with him to do a USPSA match. And so, because I've only been doing that for maybe a year. So he asked if I would come do that. I went and did that with all full tactical gear and all the whole nine yards. And found out how bad it sucked about moving and shooting in general. So then I was able to seek out some other instruction that kind of did the performance-based shooting. And come to find out, Joe was local to us here. He lives 40 minutes from me. So I started talking to him. And so I staged a class with him and then started doing some of this performance-based. And that will really show you how bad you suck.
Yeah. So that's, and Joe comes from, what's his background as far? I think it's three-gun, isn't it?
Well, three gun is what he does. Yeah, he was law enforcement, I guess, prior. And then, he does three gun. He's a machine. Like, he's...
He's a freak.
He's a freak. He's at the top, he's at the top of his game for a reason. Like, he has some other things online that he does with his dry fire crew and those kind of things. And so it's... He's just all around, like, will help, any student or anybody that is interested in firearms. He's definitely a great one to kind of watch.
Yeah, I think that's the one thing. It's like we talked about it earlier, but Joe is one of those guys, and I'm not speaking for him, but I'm just going to say from noticing and observing is an instructor who can perform on demand. You know what I'm saying?
Very
like
much
he
so.
Will set a standard and then perform that standard, and that's something I think that any instructor or any course that you go to, that's a great way to vet, is to see like what instructors are doing what they ask you to do. Yeah. They say, "Hey, this is the standard you're going to perform. I can do it. Watch. Here you go. Live fire. Do it on demand. Do exactly how they say they're going to do it. There's no mess ups." And that I think is the difference between, someone who, and there's also like a part of it was like, you have to have the ability to teach like that in itself. Yeah. You got to have the ability to relay the information.
For sure.
Two, the skill level needs to be at a point where if you can do something or say you're going to do something, then you can do it right then.
Yeah, on-demand performance is a big deal in shooting sports, right? Mm-hmm. But these gentlemen that do it at a high level are able to perform it, right? I want you to do X, and this is Y, right? Mm-hmm. So, and if they can just perform it on demand, like I need you to go run a build drill in this whatever at this range, this many shots, and this size,
right?
Like this. Well, that shows you that it can be done, not just that they can do it or they're cool. It's like it can be done. That dude does it. Just he's talking and then he's shooting.
Yeah.
And he did it. There was no crazy prep or smoking mirrors. It's
didn't his work son, his way up to it.
No. Yeah. He didn't he didn't go shoot four and then shoot three and then go shoot a bill. Like he went ahead and just did it.
Yeah.
And being able to perform at those levels on demand, 9 out of 10 times, you're not always gonna smoke it, but is a big deal. And I think it's one of the probably the driving factor in being able to vet an instructor.
Yeah.
In my opinion, my limited exposure to shooting, in my opinion.
Well, I think that goes to show you're a pure example of how, you come from no real background in firearms. You have no bad habits. You have no, FUD lore that you had introduced to you that now you have to unlearn. And so you went and you sought instruction, and luckily it was, with instructors who are performing and able to do what they say, and then you go and digest that and work on the skill sets and then decide, hey, I'm at the appropriate time in my journey to go to another instructor to learn the next little bit of information for a little bit more homework, and to see where you've gone from then when we first met to now. Like it's incredible.
It is night and day, and it's super fun, and it's with no ego. Like I'm a B class in USPSA. I'm no like grandmaster by any means, right? Like maybe one day we'll get there. But just being able to stack the next thing on, but having like having everything kind of under control before I stack the next person on, the next instructor or the next information, has served me well. Now I'm not flying from, you know, from nothing to GM in 6 months. That's not what I'm doing. My whole thing behind shooting, and it has been since day one, is being able to perform at that level. So whether at the, whatever the level is, right? And USPSA, they grade it, right? C, D, or D, C, B, A, Master, Grandmaster. So I'm a B class, whatever, right now. That's fine. I want to be able to be at the top of that class. I want to be able to shoot at that level or above that level at all times. Whether we're just hanging out shooting, whether we're shooting like a demo for something because we're making videos or whatever, or we're just whatever, we're at Open Gym, or if I'm at USPSA, I want to be able to shoot at that level.
Right.
I don't want to come there and like go shoot a, like get lucky, hero or zero it.
Yeah,
correct. If I hero or zero it, and I'm, oh cool, I shot a bunch of classifiers at master and now I'm a master, but when I come there, I shoot like I'm B class. It's not what I'm looking for.
It's a false level of performance.
It's it's like what they call paper GMs, right? Mm-hmm. So I just do that to my whole shooting, everything, right? Whether it's a rifle, a pistol, whatever. That's kind of how my approach. I don't know if it's good, you know, right, wrong, or indifferent.
I would agree that it is.
But it's how I want to do things. I want to be, whether I'm in competition or shoot with the boys, at that level.
Mm.
Or obviously always trying to exceed it. But
yeah,
we don't want to sandbag and like come in and be like, oh, I did this thing for Instagram and like I can run a build drill in 2 seconds. And like, so cool. Like you can do it one time out of 300.
Right.
And you've just, that's, you spend all day doing it.
Yeah.
I want to be able to do what these high level instructors show me as, and not just build drill, like anything, you know, on demand. I can go put those 4 shots where I want them. I can go put those 2 shots where I want them quickly and accurately.
Yeah. Cause I think there's a difference between like, you know, somebody who is sound in their shooting abilities and can adapt to whatever drill is presented or adapt to whatever environment that they're in versus like a one trick pony who's like, man, that's all I do is I work on this one drill. Of course you're going to be good at it.
Yeah.
You're going to suck at everything else. And it doesn't give you a true idea of like where you're at as a shooter and your level of performance and like where your capability is. And I think that's one thing that goes back to, in my opinion, whenever you go to that class, digesting all that information over a span of time and doing your homework and then being like, okay, I'm not just going to practice a couple of drills and now I'm going to go to another class after a month. Like you're like, I'm going to master these things that I got exposed to and rep it to now where it's literally just, you know, like a reflex. And now I know, okay, I'm ready for the next level of performance of instruction.
Absolutely right. Yeah. Cause I don't feel like I can, you know, add another instructor's information on top of one I just got 2 months ago. I'm either going to be leaving out the stuff that he showed me because I don't have a firm grasp on it yet.
Right.
And then I feel like the intake portion is going to be not as well either because I'm still like trying to work on the things that I sucked at last time and we're working on new things that I suck at now, which, you know, it's a process. But I can't take in everything they're giving me. Because I don't have a good, my foundation is not where it needs to be.
Right.
So I have found that there, you can't really rush your shooting journey. Like I feel like I've, you know, maybe done it fairly quickly.
Yeah.
In the grand scheme of things, a lot of guys that I get to shoot with have shot for 10 and 20 and 25 years, and they are just crazy good. So even trying to get close to them, you know, 2 years in is like ridiculous.
Yeah.
So
I think that something that's refreshing is having a pace man, because like if you're at the top of your crew, you kind of don't really know, there's nobody really there, anyone there to push you. You know what I'm saying? Like there's no one to pace off of. And so that's something that's refreshing is having a pace man that's in your group that you can kind of follow or reach, or someone that you watch or you've been to their class and be like, okay, I want to observe them and try to reach that level. And then once you hit that level, okay, now you look for the next pace man. You know what I'm saying? And so, but you can't do that. I love that you said you can't rush the journey and you just got to enjoy it. Like Jerry Mitchell, he's still on his journey he's 70 something years old.
He's still going.
Yeah.
Like, so he's still learning. He still learns stuff, I'm sure. Like,
yeah.
You know, so it's awesome to see.
Yeah. I think, if you want to, everybody wants to be extremely fast and have all show.
Man,
and we all want to be there.
It's super fun. It's super cool looking. It's really fun. Like, I thoroughly enjoy shooting. Like, it became more than just shooting a firearm. Like,
An obsession.
It really has. Like, I'm doing it all the time. I seem to have a knack for it in general. And then, so I'm trying to build on that. Because whether you're good at something out of the box or not doesn't really matter. Because in this game, if you don't put the work in, you're not going to get the benefit. I don't really care who you are. You're just not going to roll out of bed and be like, I'm GM.
Yeah.
It doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
You have to put in the time, the effort, And then what all that looks like is kind of, you know, a different for everybody, right?
Right.
But you still have to put all the effort and the time and the dry fire and all the stuff in, or you just won't. You won't, when it comes to perform on demand, you just won't do it.
What are some things that are lessons learned, that mistakes you've made in that journey that you quickly identified were like, okay, you know, don't go down this road or don't go down this route? Or did you even have those, or has it been pretty seamless?
I mean, nothing's really ever super seamless, but maybe getting some instruction a little sooner than I did.
Sure.
But I mean, there hasn't been anything that's been like crazy. I've kind of taken it. I mean, it's only been 2 years, but I've kind of taken it slow, right? Kind of get this and then go to this guy and get that, kind of digest this, run into these people, you know, get this high, like a higher level instructors, and kind of like don't. I knew one thing off the rip was not to fill my whole year with instructors.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, just all the research I did tells you that you shouldn't. And
yeah.
So it made sense to me. When they said like two of them and you'd be able to digest stuff for 6 months and then try to be able to stack on, you know, without having a bunch of deficiencies,
yeah,
in the stuff that you had already done. And so I applied that from day one, and it seems to be paying dividends.
I think the other thing also is you said that you went to, you know, you went to Joe for your second class farewell training, and then you went to, who did you go to next after that?
A Winter Paradise Summit is what Joe does every year. It's like the second week in December. It's a great event. It's 3 days, three instructors, 30 dudes, period, or 30 people in general.
Right.
So 10 people per instructor per day, and we swap Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. You get Donovan Moore from Point One Tactics. You get Nick Young from Velux Group, and then you get Joe.
Yeah.
Everyone has a different thing that they do. They have things that they agree on and they disagree on in between them. But they are all top level guys in the industry. Like they, and for a very good reason, like they train with the top level guys and or train them, and then they can perform it on demand.
Yeah.
You're not going to impress those guys when you go to the class, you're going to go get homework.
Mm.
I think the biggest thing I took away from now seeing them twice, cause I've been doing it for 2 years, is that them providing the tools to train, right? Because I don't know how to train for USPSA. Like, I've gone to the matches and done the matches and stuff, but, like, how do you train for these positions? How do you train to get in and out of position? How do you do the stuff Eric Griffel does? How do you do the stuff Joe does?
Mm.
And so Nick and Donovan and Joe are all very good at explaining what your homework should be.
Right.
What your metrics should be, what your level of accuracy, like at 7 or at 5 yards, if you're doing doubles, like should it be the whole A zone like we're doing out there because we don't know any better? Well, in his class, the level of acceptability at 5 yards is like the size of your thumb.
Right.
So just those, just little things like that they can explain to you is epiphany moments for people like me, because I thought we were doing okay.
Yeah.
Well, we're not, and that's okay. Like. So get it sucked down and then figure out what it takes to do that. And that's what these boys are doing at a very high level.
And I think that's something else. It's also like in the beginning of your journey, there is a ton of stuff to work on, right? And there's a huge amount of skill sets you have to work on, because it's all basic fundamental skills and all this type of stuff. But as you've progressed, you've kind of narrowed that down to a few specific things, and you just spend a lot of time working on those, correct?
Yeah, so shaving the seconds off, just like if you're in the gym, right? So if you want to lose a bunch of weight, you lose a bunch of it pretty quickly, and then you plateau. And then it gets really hard to get those incremental losses. Same thing with the shooting. At the beginning, because you've never done it, and you're working a bunch on it, and you're like, you're doing all your dry fire and all these things, your weapons handling is getting better and these things, but you don't really get I lost it.
You don't really get like a ton of stuff progress, you
right,
know, like
right.
As
well,
you get
in
the beginning.
That's okay. So sorry. So you get the quick progress in the beginning, but when you plateau, so like in USPSA, it's seconds, right? So you can find seconds in and out of position, gun up before you get into position, those kind of things. The higher the level, you start getting tenths of a second.
Mm-hmm.
So where can I find 5/10 of a second each time? Where can I find, you know what I mean? The increments get smaller.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah. I think that's where like those more advanced instructors, that's what you're going to get out of it, is you're going to get, one, you got to be a shooter that's already shaved all the seconds off. Like you've lost all the fat. Now you're going to those specialty instructors to shave off tenths of seconds and finding those small nuggets of information or those small techniques that they've applied and that style to be like, now I'm getting my tenth of seconds right. off of my time.
Consistently.
Correct. Consistently.
Yeah. Consistently. Yeah, because if you show me where I can get a tenth of a second in one position, it doesn't really help me too much.
Mm-hmm.
But if I can get a tenth of a second doing that or 2/10 of a second doing that in every position,
yeah.
like that's a second of stage. Like yeah. That's all. You can win a competition like that.
Yeah.
And then applying it across the board. So just being able to pick a little piece from all these high level guys and then like trying to create my own person as a shooter, I think is, you know, it's kind of the route I want to take. So
yeah.
we'll see if it's,
I think that's the correct method, because at the end of the day, and this is something that like I've noticed with different units or different people, is they go to the same instructor every time. And this is something I've even said in my class. I'm like, hey, don't just keep coming to me, because guess right. what? I don't, you know, you don't want to replicate and become another Eric or another Joe or another Donovan. So if you keep going to the same guy, you essentially live in an echo chamber. But what you said is you're taking different instructors and you're applying all their different styles. And then you also have, you develop your own style of shooting.
Yeah.
Correct.
So me, so.
Correct. So like having, making sure that one, you're diversifying the instructors that you go to, that's going to help you develop your own style versus living in an echo chamber.
Correct. And then also with the instructors that you do go to multiple times, making sure that their curriculums are evolving. Because I think that's super important. Because those guys that I mentioned, just because I've had the fortune of running into them or paying and going to a class regardless, they do not teach the same thing this year that they taught last year.
Yeah.
Not entirely, right? Yeah. So the core fundamentals are still there. But like there are additional items that they either add or take away based on their shooting journey that year and other people that they have gone to for continuous improvement, where they can add or take away.
Yeah, I think that's something that I can maybe be a little bit egotistical about what my curriculum, and that is, it's all, people have come to class before and been like, and this class is different than last time. Like this is new, or you added this, and that's just, you know, a reflection of my journey as well as a shooter to continuously evolve. And in turn, the curriculum will also evolve, because it's like, hey, I found a better way to do this. You know, this instructor taught me this, and now I'm going to shave that, and it works. You know, so I think this is pertinent to the curriculum. Or, you know, even this student showed me something that was like really effective. And so like coming into a class with an open mind, being an instructor that also has an open mind to even learn from the student, maybe something that they see that was more efficient, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that one, it takes all the pressure off, because you don't have any ego to defend,
no.
But two, it allows you to be able to absorb all the good attributes that all those other shooters around you have, apply them to your own, honestly, selfishly, to develop your own style to be better.
For sure.
Yeah. I think the one thing that I've seen, like, and for me as a shooter, is there are certain times where, you know, people will try to buy their performance. They try to, you know, buy that equipment. I think we talked about it earlier, but you cannot buy that performance. You have to train, put in the time like you did. You go from Canic to Glock to now you're running an Atlas or a 2011.
2011. Yeah. I run a Prodigy. So I wanted to do something that not a lot of people had done. It looked like it was a good platform based on the little bit of research that it did. So I went ahead and bought one. I'm like, look, if I'm going to run 2011s, I hadn't made the decision to do it. I thought it was going to be fun. I use it out at JTAC, beat the crap out of it, see if it works. That was my, you know, bid for the 2011 arena when all my buddies were getting like Atlases and stuff and running crazy. I'm like, I'm not currently at that time. I was like, I'm not spending that money on that. Mm-hmm. I feel like I can build a little, you know, redneck version. And so that's kind of what it did. And now it's kind of becoming a thing, because now I have three of them. But one, my race gun, which is provided to me by Titan Arms, which is a local company here, is just a Prodigy raced out with all Atlas guts and internals.
Nice.
So the only thing left on it is the barrel and the slide. So everything else has been replaced.
Yeah. So. What are some... what are your, walk us through your build with that pistol, your pistol build, and then also what your two gun AR build is and what you're running.
So let's start with the AR is now, I just got it. I ran into a good deal. I didn't plan on buying it, but it's a Cobalt.
It happens.
Yeah, I know. But guy had it. He had won the upper, and like, so he gave it to me for a crazy price. It was brand new. And so it's a Cobalt 13.7, which is the same as my battle rifle. That's, again, we talked about it, but that's, I'm partial to now instead of the 14.5 or the 13.9. 13.7 seems to be like my sweet spot. A5 buffer system, easy, and I'm happy. So, it's got a big old break on it because I run it for competition, and then my, like my, I guess my running around like battle gun would be is that Prodigy. Mm. So I have one that's set up for USPSA, and then I have one that's set up for like we run at JTAC or run, right. run at Two Gun. So,
nice. And then what optic are you running on that? On both.
So the Steiner MPS is what I have on the like the battle one, right? So in case we do live in Florida, so it's going to be you know water and mud and sand and wind and all that. So it's an enclosed emitter that I run on that one, so I don't have any of those issues that we tend to run into in our test bed. Mm-hmm. And then the other one's got the 507 comp on it, giant window. I don't have to turn it on. It
Dude, just, I love that optic.
Oh, that's, I forgot you had that on your. You had that. You got it before I got it, but they. I love it. Like I run it occluded a lot. It's a pretty big window to have occluded, mm-hmm. but I've just recently taken that off, and so being able to look through that big window has been it's been really nice. I haven't personally had any downsides to it.
What has the benefits been from running an occluded optic, and who introduced you to that?
So, Donovan Moore did at the end of his class last year. He runs from appendix and he was running occluded. I am left eye dominant and right handed. So, it's kind of a nightmare when you're shooting a rifle. I've kind of trained myself to use my right eye. And so, for me, when he showed me the occlusion, it helped a lot because I pick up so much information with my left eye that the right eye kind of like let it superimpose like it's supposed to. Mm. But when it would bounce around, I would look at it, and then when I was shooting, I would track, you know, improperly. So I put that occlusion on there, and if you stare at the dot, it instantly punishes you. So I like that because mm-hmm. instant gratification. Yeah. Okay, don't do that.
Yeah.
And if you stare at the target, then you kind of like Apache Pilot, right? It comes up and it just superimposes, and that's kind of like how my brain worked because I'm left eye dominant.
Right.
So a lot of people use it as training tools, and they only use it for like a month or two, and then they'll take it off. You know. Be able to look through the optic because you can see more, right? Mm-hmm. And then they'll put it back on just to double check they're being target focused. Well, for me, I left it almost a year.
Like I was about to say, you shot every time I saw you shooting, it was occluded. I was like, man, I guess why I even have a window, bro.
I don't take it off. So I shot IPSC Nationals like that. Yeah. I shot every USPSA match like that. I shot at JTAC like that. We laid under chairs. I shot occluded. The only time I didn't is when we shot like VTACs and stuff because you have to look through the window and your other eye, the hole's not big enough for you to even see the target. But aside from that, it was occluded. And I think the only way only reason I got away with it for as long as I did is because I'm left eye dominant and I was picking up all the information here. I just recently took it off. It has let the speed progress a little bit because it gives me that big old window to continue to look through. So if I'm not staring at the dot, it behooves me to not, you know, not have it occluded so I can get to use both eyes, but
it's a big window.
It's a big window.
It's a big window.
So even me being left eye dominant, when I had it on the right side, because the wind is so big, like I would have to snap back and forth sometimes with my eyes because it's so big. And when I get it up in the window, like there's so much black there.
Yeah.
So taking that, so at a point it will slow you down.
Yeah.
It will be a crutch. Just depends on how long it takes to be a crutch.
Right.
The top level guys know it. They've told me. Mm-hmm. They told me to my face, like, hey, well, you know, and I just wrote it out as long as I could, and I just took it off. And I think this year Nick and Donovan were the ones that really showed me what target focus was a month ago.
Yeah.
And it had nothing to do with that occlusion. Now, the occlusion will help a little bit. I thought I was target focused because it was occluded. Yeah, what it really feels like to be target focused. Now, I thought because I was occluded that I didn't have a choice but to be staring at the target and not the red dot because it instantly punishes you, which is true. But until you actually do it and you have that like epiphany moment where it's like, oh, that's what picking a small spot is.
Yeah.
You really don't know what it feels like. So when you do, then you're like, okay, I just spent all year with this thing occluded. And I was staring at the target. I was staring at the target, but like I wasn't picking a small spot. My brain kind of wasn't detaching from the dot moving and just trying to be aware of the dot instead I don't need to see what it's, I don't need to stare at what it's doing.
Yeah.
Like I should know what it's doing. I should be aware of the dot moving, but still staring at a very, very small spot.
Yeah.
And I was able to do that in each one of their classes, as they, you know, showed us how, and it was a big deal for me.
Wow.
So I started doing doubles and started doing some other ways to practice and stuff that before I just couldn't quite pull off.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all vision led.
Yeah,
a big deal.
I think that's something else also is I think the ability to identify your own problems and to identify your own deficiency, not after a drill is done, but literally in the middle of a drill. Like if you see something you're doing wrong, your form's wrong, being able to identify that and fix it in a tenth of a second on the fly is something that I've been, you know, really focused on. So like if I see that round appear off target and I'm seeing that through my window, then being able to adjust and retrack or fix grip or something like that on the fly to be able to make that correction if I need to. That's incredible. I think, the occlusion of the dot is funny how we saw that, like you kind of started that trend at the group.
At the ranch. Yeah. And nobody was doing it. And like, I didn't understand it at first. Mm-hmm. But I mean, as soon as I did it, it made perfect sense. And I've showed a handful of guys and I've always said it cause I'm no trainer. Like I'm just, you know, just trying to shoot the best I can, blah, blah, blah. But, if I show them or they ask me, I'm like, look, these guys use it as a training tool. Don't do what I'm doing. I tell them like the only reason I've done it as long as I've done it is cause I'm left eye dominant and it's let me get away with it, you know, quote unquote, a little bit longer. I said, but you're going to want to take it off. This is just to like, make sure you're not staring at it. Cause that's kind of a big deal in all of our shooting journeys. It's like staring at the dot, right, is a problem.
Well, before even staring at the dot, finding it, you know, like everybody wants to find it.
I have video upon video of me doing the same exact thing. And until somebody shows you or you shoot enough or dry fire enough to figure and you're like critical of yourself, you're not going to know.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're not going to know it was your presentation that was doing it. You don't know.
Yeah.
Because nobody told you.
Yeah. Yeah. So. I think that's it. For those who haven't started dot shooting, one, I think it's the future. And it's at a point now where dots are so ruggedized that it's pretty much like I don't even use irons really anymore.
I take them off.
Yeah. It's just extra crap in the window or crap that's on the gun. Like it's just, there's so many good arguments. Yeah. We won't do that here, but
right.
Shooting a red dot's the future. And it's interesting to see how the competition world has now adapted to that. Do you think that that's going to be pretty much a standard where it's not even going to be a class anymore where red dots are in a class, or do you think iron sights will still always be?
Yeah, I don't dig into there too far. Personally, I don't, you know, limited will probably always be a thing. There'll probably be some other ones that are phased out. Limited optics is a new division, a provisional division this year or whatever. So a bunch of us jumped in that. So if you had your Atlas or your high end 2011 or even your low end 2011 single action only, you can now run in your own division, didn't put you in open. So putting us in open, if you had that, was really difficult because they have major scoring, which is more points for, you know, areas of the shot. So like alphas are always 5, but a Charlie is on major scoring is 4 and on minor scoring is 3. So you're like, if you have an Atlas or a 2011, you're minor scoring pretty much no matter what.
Yeah.
And then these guys have these big $10,000-$12,000, you know, not that the money is the point, but like 3 chambered, braked, you know, the optic is mounted to the frame. It doesn't reciprocate. Guns that are built just for that, and you're just not going to outrun them.
Yeah.
So I think that was a really big deal for USPSA in general to kind of break that off.
Yeah.
It allowed a lot more people it lowered the barrier of entry.
Do you think you'd ever get into 3-gun? Were you running shotguns or have you thought about?
I thought about it. And Joe being a good buddy, like, you know, I wanted to do it there for a minute. Another buddy of ours actually loaned me one of those the blue FN shotguns. It was all milled out.
Yeah.
I was like practicing quad loading and all that stuff. And then I shot a little bit at the ranch. I got to tell you, it might be controversial, but I don't really care about a shotgun. I just don't.
Yeah.
Like 2-gun, I'm all about it. Rifle and a pistol, I'm all about it. Like there's a PCSL league or something that's in North
Kenny's
Florida.
Kenny's been dumping into that PCC, I think. Not PCSL, but PCC.
Yeah, he bought a PCC. He bought a JP5 that is super fun. It's like a laser beam.
It's
like
fast.
It's a 9mm like carbine thing. It's
what's recoil? There's no recoil on that thing.
No, we were running it like 10 splits on the thing and it just literally just carves a hole in whatever. I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah. So you're not doing the shotgun thing. No. I honestly don't have, I mean, that's a whole nother animal and monster in its own.
It's a whole nother thing to clean, maintain, buy ammo for. And currently the way I'm focusing, I'm not saying I'd never do it. I mean, shooting anything is awesome, but the way I'm currently, my trajectory is kind of pistol and with some rifle.
Yeah. As far as the, as far as like other goals that you have and things that you'd like to get into, what are some goals that you have established for your two gun and pistol? And have you ever thought about long range or PRS or that type of thing as so, being a possibility?
Yeah. So we've had that conversation about long range. So I've shot some PRS stuff with you guys. I've shot some PRS match with you guys. And the way my brain works, and people can call me stupid, but like once I hit it at 800 or 1,000 yards, I don't care about it anymore because I know where the hole's at.
Yeah.
So like maybe it took me 3 to get there. Maybe it took me 1 to get there. But once right. I hit it, once I can hit it again, I don't need to, you know what I mean? Like
yeah.
I know where it's at. And so it's not as intriguing for me. Some guys really love it and are really good at it. Like I'm not really great at it. I can do it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not, you know, I'm no top 10 guy. Like those guys are crazy.
Yeah.
It just doesn't interest me. In the way that the other disciplines do.
It's a whole another animal. I mean, like we had the gas gun, the 5.56 only gas gun match. And we had, dude, Kenny actually crushed it, dude.
He did so good, dude.
So Kenny crushed it. He's actually been through our scope carbine course, and I love using him as a poster child because I'm like,
And I will tell you, outside looking in, and him being part of my, like my Bush League team, like he... is night and day.
Yeah.
He was a good shooter before, don't get me wrong. But after going through that and then coming back out with like the boys shooting, he was smoking everybody.
Yeah.
At long, like long range, you couldn't
touch him with it.
No. Yeah. Up to 500, you couldn't get near that dude. Yeah. He would one shot, one hit. I didn't care what the wind was. It didn't matter, dude. He would just.
I'm one of those shooters where I have to, something that sometimes it's just a DNA thing. Like I can work and get to a certain level, but and spend so much energy trying to do that and get there and work all this, and then some people can just do it naturally. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, like sometimes it's just it boils down to DNA.
It's annoying.
Yeah,
it's annoying. And then some people say that about me too, right?
Yeah.
So, but it is annoying. But that's still only going to take any of us so far.
That's right.
Your work ethic is what's going to take you the rest of the way or make you the guy to beat. And so we're like, I have a small group that I train with. From JTAC, that has become like a core group that does USPSA and those kind of things. And then now I shoot for Excalibur Ammunition. So there's 4 of us on that team. And so being able to, lucky enough to be on that team and to push each other, we were just at a match Sunday and it was the best one I ever shot.
Wow.
Like by far.
Yeah.
And it was, and they put all of us on the same team. We got 2 limited guys, or limited optics guys, which is me and Colin. And then you got Dalton running carry optics, and then Breno is running open.
Mm.
And so, like, we're just chasing each other, pushing each other, you know, talking smack, like doing whatever you got to do. It's still fun.
Yeah.
Like even trying to make it a high level, it's still super fun.
Yeah.
It's super competitive, and it's like, you know, like we're doing states in a couple weeks, and my teammate that runs limited optics with me, I'm like, you're my everybody's my competition.
But yeah.
Like, you're going to be on my squad and we're going to be trying to smoke each other.
That's right.
It's super fun.
It's, and that's something it's like, it's always cool to be able to push and drive each other. Try to have that pace, man.
Yeah.
It's out there always, cause you always, and we're all competitive, but, that style of group is how you have developed friendships and things of that nature out of around shooting.
Absolutely.
How has that changed your life as far as, would you say that shooting has changed your life and the friends you've made and things of that nature?
I would absolutely say that. So I would, I work construction like a regular job in the office now, but it's allowed me to network on a different level.
Mm.
So to network with people that I would never really run into, you get to meet a lot of people in different walks of life that you would never meet in your normal life, right? So there's doctors, there's lawyers, there's construction workers, there's whatever, right? These, you wouldn't just run into these people and hang out with them. So it's been really cool to do all that, which has allowed me to network. And then it's also sparked me creating a company. So, or 2 of them.
Mm.
The Bush League is kind of splintering from the retail. It's the retail, which is Bush League. And also, hopefully, eventually, I can be sponsoring shooters and paying for their match fees. That's kind of what it's for. It's kind of become something that instead of looking for sponsors or trying to find, like, I'll just be one eventually, right?
Yeah.
I want to be able to like help these guys along, do like things that people have done for me.
Mm.
Like people, because I do shoot for a team now, so that, you know, it's like I always call it a development deal.
Yeah.
Because I'm not some GM, I'm not some crazy, you know, I don't have any attributes that are, you know, out of the ordinary. Like, right. I would just put in the work in, somebody saw it in me and is allowing me to do it, and I'm going to make good on it. So it's been a journey. It's been fun.
What are some final parting words of advice that you have for the listeners as far as training regimen and some things to be careful about and to stay away from?
So really vetting your instructors is super important. I mean, like the high level guys, you guys harp on it all the time, but it is like definitely the truth. And from a guy that come, you know, has only been doing it for 2 years and has kind of slowed down taking on new people to train with, it's a big deal. Like if they can't do it on demand and they can't demonstrate it for you, or at least explain to you why and how, they're probably not the one for you. It doesn't make them a bad person. They may have the best intentions, but like that's most likely not what you're looking for.
Yeah,
I mean, it's continuing this journey is going to be fun. I'm looking forward to working with a bunch of people here in the future. I have a couple lined up before states that I'm going to go spend some time with and try to get better and see how that all pans out. And then we'll be hopefully traveling the country doing this a little bit. So
that's awesome.
Like I'm not stopping. So,
yeah,
you know, we're going to continue with the dry fire. Joe's got a great program on Farewell Firearms that I actually just started myself.
Nice.
So I'm not above dry fire. And we're going to keep learning how to train with these gentlemen and then spending as much time as we can, you know, on the range and putting these things in practice.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you again for coming and sharing your story, and we'll have to have you come back, especially with like either Donovan or Joe, and have them, Nick, and maybe we all three of us can talk and talk about different things related to performance-based shooting. But one thing that I wanted to talk to you guys about, we are offering a lifetime membership. So myself and Tyler and Roy, we're going full-time this year. So what we're doing is we're pretty much providing a lifetime membership where people get access to member-only videos. Right. That's like things that we can't put on YouTube. So like disassembly, reassembly of things, right. You know, teaching and baseline performance and understand the fundamentals and holster draw and all those types of things about teaching people. Well, that's a resource that we're giving to the lifetime members. And then also the cost of lifetime membership, you get 2 free classes a year with us.
Oh, wow.
But the cost of lifetime membership is for 2 classes. So it's like 500 something bucks.
You can't beat that. This is the first time I'm hearing about it.
Yeah. So you get 2 free classes a year or 1 free 2-day class. And that's for the rest of Barrel and Hatchet's life. So, you know, that helps us kickstart our thing, but also kind of gives back to the people who've been supporting the channel. So that's something that we are offering. There's only 300 slots. I think we've sold quite a few, so there's not very many slots left. But we're also going to create a community group chat for those members so they can talk and network with each other. But, yeah.
We're also doing a pre-sale right now. There's a pre-sale.
Oh, yeah, and we're doing Bush League.
So
we're going through Jason's company for the shirts. So that pre-sale actually ends tonight. By the time this podcast is uploaded, it will be over in a couple of hours. So make sure you jump on that. If you are listening to this and the first one to hear about it, make sure you head over and get a shirt, because it's a one-time thing. So anyways, thanks again for coming in.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
For everybody else, make sure you guys go out and train. Continue to invest in yourself. You're the most important thing. So invest in yourself. Make sure you're the asset, not the liability. And we'll see you on the next one.
See you.